guess we're on air. We don't have an on-air light coming on today, which is a bit deceiving for Mental Health Radio taken from us. That's what you're listening to right now, and nothing like a start with Joe Cocker, his track called Respect Yourself. I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran, and Mental Health Radio is brought to you and funded by Ember Wellbeing Trust. Here's what was said by today's guest in an email to Planet FM recently. My name is Tess Sheeran. I suffered from a breakdown in 2018, and last week I got the courage to post a blog on my social media. I was overwhelmed by the heartfelt messages from people, some of which I had never met, that told me that what I wrote about really struck a chord, and thanked me for sharing my story. In her blog, Tess talks about her, quote, neurons being on red alert. Let's talk to Tess about how that feels, how it feels to have your neurons being on red alert. So welcome, Tess, to Mental Health Radio, take it from us. You're on the phone to us from somewhere in the South Island.
Yeah, it's on. Hi, Sheldon. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm in Christchurch.
You're in Christchurch. Not. Yeah. I got the impression that you were on a farm somewhere in a rural setting, but where did I get that from?
Yeah, that'd be right. Yes, so I'm currently looking after my parents' farm while they're in Canada. So that's kind of, I don't know if you know Christchurch. Oh, yes, no, you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, Prebleton kind of way.
Oh, okay, not too far out of town.
No, well, moved out that way. It used to be.
Well, you mean the town's moved out that,
that
way.
Yeah, the quakes, isn't it? It's really grown.
Yeah, so that's the sort of the western side of Christchurch that's grown so dramatically.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Not to your liking, or?
No, I really don't like. Yeah, no, I don't like it at all, really.
Right.
I love the nature. I'd rather it be a bit quieter, definitely.
So when you're on the farm, you feel closer to nature?
Oh, I love it, yeah. It's a walnut blueberry farm, so it's very tree-y, as you can imagine. Trees everywhere.
Wow, walnuts and blueberries.
Yes, very good for mental health.
I bet. And do you invite people to pick the blueberries like they seem to do on many blueberry farms?
This place, they just do it to order. You can ring up and just order a couple of kg. Right. I don't think Dad wants people walking around. I don't know.
No. Yeah. Oh, well, that's, I mean, is being there and being with your parents, is that part of what you wrote to Planet FM about, your breakdown in 2018?
Yeah, it's been fantastic having their support, 100%. I don't think I would have got better if I didn't have the time and space to understand what was going on sort of with me.
Right.
Yeah, so it's been fantastic having them.
So you've had great support from your parents, and the fact that they live in a natural sort of environment, how's that helped you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the farms, I think it's just because I've grown up here. We've had it in the family for 35 years. It's it's very kind of, it's a healing place. I've lived everywhere, all out in different places around New Zealand and also, the UK, or different places around the globe, really. And, I've always come back here to heal, though. So, it's a special place for sure.
Yeah, well, it's lovely to have that special place. I grew up on Scarborough Hill in Sumner. And,
nice.
That was a very special place.
Yeah, I'm thinking of moving there next.
Yep. Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Right.
Get in the surf.
Yeah, well, I did a lot of surfing on that beach and all around New Zealand as well. So I have, that has a special place in my heart. But my father, who was getting on, had to sell, and that was a very sad day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have a plan to maybe move to Sumner?
Yeah, that's where I'm going to go. They're actually selling this place. So, it's time for me to go somewhere anyway, but it's where I think I'll will be best suited to me at this phase. Great to be. I feel it really healing being in the water.
Yeah.
Learning something like surfing is great.
Yeah, so you'll be doing some surfing there as well.
Yeah. I'll try to go at least 3-4 times a week, I'm sure.
Oh, brilliant. Well, yeah. Nothing like a benefit to your mental health from surfing.
Yeah.
I could talk about that for the whole program.
Yeah. I know. It is amazing. Surfing is great.
In our introduction, we talked about you, your experience of feeling as though you had your neurons on red alert. What happened when you felt that way?
I definitely realised that my neurons were on red alert, and it was pretty much after I dragged myself to a spin and a yoga class. And usually I get the endorphins would kick in and I'd get a shift in mood. And so after 2 hours of exercise that day, I felt like absolutely nothing. So I knew I was in trouble.
So just to clarify there, you did 2 hours of exercise, so spin class and yoga.
Really intense exercise with the spin class and then yoga, which is obviously for the body and the mind. And there was no positive shift in mood at all. It was just flat. And I was like, this is just, I already knew I was really depressed, but that was like when I was like, okay, I'm really, really in trouble.
So what did you do when you had that realisation?
I can't remember. I think I just like knew I wasn't, and I still just carried on in the way I'd always been brought up. We use stoicism kind of to, keep moving forward and just work through the problems. And I still was doing that. And it wasn't until I physically couldn't look after myself. I think that was actually about 4 months later, and I had moved away and I'd started this other project idea, and then I had to pull the plug on it, and I came back home and I went into therapy, and that was my first step, was actually telling my parents, because I took an enormous amount of energy to pretend that everything was sweet for such a long time. So I didn't want to hassle other people with my problems. I just thought it'd work out, because that's what I've been brought up to do.
So you had a sort of a goal to try and do it all on your own without revealing that you were a bit vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think we're really brought up in this culture that we're not really allowed to have emotions that are visible, aren't we? So, and I'm a highly sensitive person or empath, and it just was a complete nightmare. All these emotions are leaking out of me like you wouldn't believe, and in weird situations, yeah. So I ended up having a bit of an abusive relationship with myself, I guess you could call it, yeah.
How much do you put on sensitivity as being, associated with mental health vulnerability?
Well, I think it's very hard for people that are sensitive because, you're basically like an emotional sponge, and it's not just from other people's sort of energies, if you like, or whatever they give off, but more also whatever's around you, like the noise, the lights, just, it's all very intense. And from an early age, I was always, as soon as I learned to drive, I'd come back and I just need like half an hour or something, just time out, and then I'd be able to do the second part of school.
Right.
But that's not really how things are designed, I guess, here in New Zealand. Maybe in Spain you can go and have your siesta and, it works there, I don't know, but... Yeah, I certainly think the sensitivity thing isn't kind of taken into account, because, it's hard. Like, we're not all robots, and that's what I wrote about Johan Hari's brilliant book, Lost Connections.
Yes.
We're not allowed to show the humane side of us almost.
The caring and compassionate side.
Yeah, which is just ridiculous, isn't it? It is ridiculous.
But, I'm assuming that your in the sort of younger age group where I guess there's more talk about mental health, there's more
awareness? Oh, yeah, it's fantastic, yep, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. You've indicated that you've lived around the world and travelled quite extensively. Mm-hmm. How was your mental health when you were travelling?
So I've had varying kind of levels of depression since I've been about 12, but my best friend would probably call it more like manic depression, more extreme highs and then extreme lows. So just depending on what's been happening on, you know, with my life on the outside, I've had... Yeah, always up, down, up, down, and then well again, and then not, you know, so quite erratic, really, with my mental health.
Yep. How did you manage that? I mean, were you required to take medication?
I did end up taking medication for, I think it was 3 years altogether, and I think it helped for 7 months, and... then I just would have kept having to up the dose, and the side effects for me just weren't worth it. I was really, like, erratic and just wasn't worth it. So I kind of believe it's big pharmaceutical pushing it just to make money. So just in my case, though, like, everyone's case is different, right? And everyone's experience in life is different, and there's a lot we don't know about the brain, isn't there? So, and I found that was, like, the least studied organ.
Right. were you under any pressure, though, from those people prescribing the medication to stay on it?
No, I would never say I had any pressure, but I did get pressure from other people, like my parents, after I'd gone off it, and I was still experiencing some problems sometimes. But not with doctors. I mean, they'd give me all the information, but I just thought this is just, it's just not working, and that book kind of talks about that a lot too. It helps a slight amount, but it doesn't get to the root of what's going on, like where the problem first started or... medication for me personally isn't going to be the solution.
Right, yep. So what do you think was going on that resulted in this breakdown in 2018?
Okay, so there were a combination of reasons. So I kind of mentioned that at the time I was had an opportunity to work with Canon, and I made the mistake of coming up with this big brief, and I hadn't even recovered from my last project, which had taken a pretty massive toll. I'd always just been taught to use stoicism to get through problems, and, yeah, it was taking a lot of energy out of me to pretend I was all good, and... so I developed a bit of an abusive relationship with myself. So I just mentioned tonight about the blog post that I sent in. So for me, the three causes in the book that I could connect with were the loss of meaningful values. So during the pollution awareness mural art tour I was doing in New Zealand, I pretty much... been a lot of time filling out paperwork and applying for funding and just hours and hours on the computer, and I was just following the extrinsic tasks, which I just wasn't good at, and so the loss of meaningful values in Western culture, we're brainwashed by advertising from birth to buy this and have that to be successful and happy, and as a result are following, you know, things that we're naturally not so good at sometimes.
We may need a little bit of background here. You've referred to a creative project that you were trying to get off the ground, which you just happened to mention sort of in passing. This was a project, was it, that you were working to... get off the ground and as some sort of national roadshow or something like that, am I correct?
So I had just completed, so I'd actually done this project, and this was one of the problems I was facing during that time frame. It took about 3 years. So I did a pollution awareness mural tour around New Zealand, and that was called New Zealand's Worth Loving. And the tour was aimed to highlight issues of water pollution and the damaging effect it has on our wildlife. And we did teamed up with charities and celebrated the completion of each mural with a clean-up event.
Right.
But I've been facing these problems and filling out all this paperwork, and it was just a lot of that, and it was just not natural to me at all, and it just added to one of the contributing factors for me getting a lot sicker.
So you had sort of some bureaucratic requirements that you had to fill out to meet funding requirements or something like that?
It kind of fitted in. Like, I'd already done it before I'd even had the idea to go and do these murals. I'd already done a project. So it just happened that they did fit into the requirements naturally anyway. I didn't have to design a brief to fit those requirements, but it was just that I'm not that good at writing. It's not a natural skill at me. I'm okay at it, but it just took me a lot longer, and
right.
had help or something to do that bit. But I just thought, oh no, I can do it.
but you are a creative. You're a creative artist. Is that?
I think I started drawing when I was 11, and it's always been something I've had as part of my life. So something that's a kind of thing other people kind of give you, don't they, a label. But I love making artwork, absolutely.
And this project where you went round the country to underline water quality or lack of water quality and that sort of thing, was that funded or sponsored by anybody?
Yeah, so it was more to do with the single-use plastics and how they're not being able to break down, and when they do, it goes into a sludge that the wildlife's eating and essentially killing them. So we did get funding. We got some amazing support. It was absolutely unreal. Lots of donations, and, I'm very, very grateful for that.
But you instigated this yourself, or were you working with anybody else?
No, I wanted to do something that wasn't. I tried to use my skills, my natural skills of the painting and the creation of it, to do something that had more meaning, I guess, and not just having a sphere. It can be very self-absorbed sometimes, I guess, just making art for the sake of it, art, and do something to help others, educate others, and
right.
help but, make change.
Yes, but this project and doing the sort of paperwork was a contributor to your breakdown.
Definitely, 100%, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Were there other things that...
So depressed people tend to isolate, and I was living nomadically on the tour, visiting cities, and I felt like I alienated myself from others. I felt quite isolated. And then there was the disconnection from the natural world that I wrote about, and I was spending time in cities with the bright lights and the noise, and just isn't a natural, healthy place for me. It's like animals that are in captivity develop mental health issues, and we're no different, although we've kind of created our own concrete cages, I guess.
Right. Can we come back and talk a bit more about that isolation during that project? We'll just take a music break. So hang on there. And Declan, what have you got for us today?
Well, I just want to ask Joshua Catterson. You all like that?
Never heard of Joshua Catterson.
Come on. It's an interesting song. It's called Jesse. And you know how you get different words out of songs? This one says You the Cat and Me, but it sounds like Youth Academy. But anyway, here it is. Yours, taken from us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting here every Tuesday live from 12:30 to 1:30 on 104.6 Planet FM.
She calls at 5 a.m. to tell me how she's tired of all of this. She says, baby, I've been thinking about a trailer by the sea. We could go to Mexico, Youth Academy. We'll drink tequila and look for seashells. Now doesn't that sound sweet? Oh, Jesse, you always do this every time I get back on my feet. Jesse, paint your pictures about how it's gonna be. By now I should know better. Your dreams are never free. But tell me all about our little trailer by the sea. Jesse, you can always sell any dream to me. Oh, Jesse, you can always sell any dream to me. Moses, he's just fine. But he used to think about you all the time. We finally took your pictures down off the wall. Jesse, how do you always seem to know just when to call? She says, get your stuff together. Bring Moses and drive real fast. Listen to her promise. I swear to God this time is gonna last. Jesse, paint your pictures about how it's gonna be. By now I should know better. Your dreams are never free. But tell me all about our little trailer by the sea. Jesse, you can always sell any dream to me. Oh, Jesse, you can always sell any dream to me.
Radio, I take it from us, and that was Joshua Catterson, is that right? Joshua Catterson.
Yeah, you're on it.
Jesse, I think if Declan had said Jesse, I might have realised that I knew that very well. We're talking to a Tess Sheeran today about her breakdown in 2018 and what brought that on. Just wondering, Tess, are you ever known as Tessie?
Yeah. We say if I need a break from what's happening, a Tessie timeout.
A Tessie yeah. time out. Yeah. So were you able to take a Tessie time out when you were on this national campaign to underline what's happening to the quality of our water?
I had to have many.
But they weren't necessarily effective. You said that you had been isolating yourself in cities. I think you said something like you didn't use this term, but getting offside with some people that you may have been mixing with to isolate.
Getting offside? What did you say? Sorry?
Well, I think you alienated. Did you use the word alienated?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I was pretty much moving around. We painted the murals. Well, I started in Queenstown because I was living there. And then we went to Dunedin and up to Christchurch, then to Auckland, and then finished in Wellington. So kind of living in different... It took 3 years to do this whole project, but we were living in different spots kind of around. And it wasn't just unusual, just by doing something different, I guess, I felt very isolated too, because this, you know, you're up on the scissor lift, and, you know, you're by yourself.
And this scissor lift was used so that you could paint these murals.
Yeah, yeah. It is fun to be up there for a bit, you know, by yourself, but I think it's more, yeah, of the whole nomadic style of living, which has some wonderful things. We met some great people, and I wasn't depressed the whole time at all. But the underlying reason, I'd say, which I found after going through all this therapy and as I've got better, is that I had the realisation that I kind of hated myself without knowing it, which is apparently not that uncommon. I sort of felt different from other people, and whatever I did was never enough.
So a little bit of lack of self-esteem?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you've been working on that?
Yeah, yep, yep. I just didn't know. I was just very, very confused. I couldn't see anything straight. My head was just in a complete confused, very, very fast, repetitive thoughts. And, and particularly in 2018, it's almost like my depression went from more manic to complete chronic, where I just had no more tears left and I felt nothing. I felt like I was watching life and I wasn't participating in it. I was just there as a bystander.
So were you in the care of mental health services when that happened?
No. There is that place. Like, my parents almost were going to put me in there at one point, and I managed to talk them out of it. And when I went to visit, it's just, that is the worst place ever, in my opinion, to put people, unless they are actually going to kill themselves or hurt somebody else.
You're talking about going into an acute psychiatric...
I think what it used to be called, what's it called now? Hill Morton, I think, in Christchurch.
Right.
Is that the one? Yeah.
But you're not talking about it being Sunnyside at that stage?
I think it was called Sunnyside, wasn't it, ages ago?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Right. But there are intermediate services like community mental health.
So I definitely went to therapy. Yep, I did two types of therapy. I think it's called Gestalt.
Right.
Gestalt therapy, and then I did cognitive behavioural afterwards. And then I even tried an alternative therapy called Havening as well. And they all helped in combination. It wasn't like, it hasn't solved anything, because this is learned thought patterns.
Right.
Experiencing these when I was 12, it's not like an instant, I'm better all of a sudden, so it's going to take time and I'm still on that journey.
Right. So, I mean, did you get a diagnosis?
What do you mean, like go to the doctor? And yeah, absolutely. The doctor said seriously to my parents when I was about 12 or 13 that I was very depressed. But I wouldn't, like, I've never been told, I've got bipolar or anything like that. I think it's very hard. I think it's often wrongly... diagnosed as well.
Well, I understand it's very difficult to distinguish between serious depression and bipolar disorder, but you've sort of described moods that go from manic to very deep depression.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what have you learnt about isolating in terms of its impact on your mental health?
Yeah, so I think there's different personalities. For me, I've got an extrovert-introvert personality. So I need, and many people, we need other people to be healthy, for sure. And I definitely kept a lot to myself and thought I had to, you know, work through it. Just because I didn't want to affect other people negatively, and I thought I'd be able to handle it. Yeah.
Can you just clarify, though, when you say we need other people to be healthy, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think it comes from, you know, we used to live in tribes, and if you were isolated from your tribe, you die. So maybe it's from that. Like, we need to have, others to be healthy and connect with. And
right. But So when you're not healthy, do you feel that Tess Sheeran is not good enough to mix with other people?
It's not. No, not at all. If somebody asked me before I went through all of this therapy, if I hated myself, I would have said, what are you talking about? I think I'm pretty sweet. It was only after I really got to the realization that the reason I felt that I wasn't enough or I felt different from other people was, I think, because my natural skills, art and sport, weren't valued by one of my parents. And also that I developed feelings for women as a teenager. I just always felt like I was wrong and never fitted in. And I think that's kind of where the roots of those thoughts patterns started. So.
What were the sports that you were good at?
Sorry, I used to play, this is very stereotypical of gay people in some ways. So I loved soccer, did a lot of soccer. as a kid, so I used to probably play that maybe 6 days a week, and then I did basketball. I loved basketball and I loved snowboarding. Yep, they were my three favourite sports.
And what benefit did you get from, you know, participating in sport?
Oh, as well as just getting the serotonin boosts and stuff, you get connection there, don't you? I've actually just rejoined a basketball team.
Right.
Just recently. And it's just that, isn't it? You just, even if you're not winning or anything like that, it's just having other people to share a passion for and just have a laugh, really.
Gives you a bit of a sense of belonging too, I guess. It's Declan here, by the way, just jumping in. I was just going to quickly throw in there too, you would have seen the movie Bend It Like Beckham.
The
soccer one?
Yes, but years ago. Yeah, I haven't seen that for a long time.
Good movie.
Yeah, and that's a good one.
Well, you know, I mean, it's quite a coincidence, really, Tess, because, you know, the surfing that I did living in Sumner, a wonderful community there, I was always with my mates. We used to travel up to Kaikoura. I played rugby in Sumner. We used to do a whole lot of biking around the Banks Peninsula. I later took up squash when I moved up to Auckland, because it was not so easy to surf. But all of that, all of that was about getting the depression out of the system, feeling better, achieving things, connecting with people, and sport has always been my purpose for connection.
Nice. Yep.
Yeah.
It all sounds great.
You've mentioned your gayness, which I didn't appreciate in what I had read. Has that been a factor? Have you experienced discrimination?
I actually haven't had. The only place I did experience that, which is kind of funny, after travelling so much, was in Christchurch when I, like, how old was I then? Maybe 26. And I was having a wrestle, and just a fun, ridiculous wrestle in Hagley Park, and someone just yelled out at me, "You're a lesbian?" Like, real, just me, you know, just, you know. But it was more that I felt like I had to hide that when I, because I went to a school that was in the country, and I definitely saw what happened to the guys that had, you know, you couldn't hide it. You could tell that they were gay, and at that time it wasn't accepted even then. Yeah.
Did you feel?
I'm only 34.
Did you feel though that they picked up on it intuitively, so you didn't actually have to say anything? They just automatically,
well,
you know.
I don't. Well, my Omar, I think she knew, but they weren't surprised at all. But no, I don't think I didn't really. I always just spent a lot of time doing sport and a lot of time doing art. And I didn't really connect, I couldn't really talk about, but I also dated boys. I had, I would identify with being lesbian, but to be honest, I'm probably like 80-20 or 90-10. It's not for me. Yeah, I don't like to be put in that box either.
Mm, more to do with the attraction to the person and the personality.
Usually a woman, though. Yeah.
You know, there's an element of listening to you, there's an element of potential confusion about who Tess really was.
Oh, 100%, 100%, yeah. Right. If someone's always telling you that you have to be, or the stereotype of what it is to be a woman, you do, you take on these thoughts like, oh, something's wrong with me, don't you? That is, for sure, one of the causes.
I think the big thing there too is you start to wonder whether you're living your life for you, or are you living it for what you think other people expect you to be doing?
100%.
And that obviously is going to have an impact. I must say, when I came out as gay years and years and years ago,
yep.
I actually had a lot of stuff at school, a lot of bullying and that sort of thing, but I think they just picked up on that. But yeah, it's a tough thing, to come through it, I think,
But Tess, were you sensitive about what you thought people were saying about you?
Oh yeah, definitely. Especially as a teenager.
Right.
Absolutely. You want to fit in as a kid, don't you? You don't want to be bullied or hassled, or you just want to, you know.
But all those sporting pursuits of yours must have helped give you acceptability and...
Oh, yeah, 100%. But you don't have that as an adult. Like, unless you went into a career, which I didn't even want to. And I did get in, I think I got named for the New Zealand soccer squad or something. And that was awesome. I felt really, really good about that. But that doesn't carry on into your adult life, really. That's, you know, it only... you don't have the same...
Well, I'm still playing tennis.
I don't mean like that. I mean it's, the goal... how do I explain? With tennis, your body kind of gives out, doesn't it? Like, I've got so many injuries from snowboarding, for example, that when I'm playing basketball, I'm just like, oh, you know, you don't have, you can't do the same things as you could when you're younger.
Maybe we have to adapt to choose sports that we can still manage. I mean, I think that for me, continuing to play at my age is helpful for my health. It keeps me in contact with people. It improves my fitness, all of those things which are good for my mental health.
Awesome. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. I think I was just living such a different life. I put a lot of those things kind of on hold. I've always been not very good at getting the balance right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's come back after our next music break and talk about balance, because probably that's a pretty critical part of one's mental health.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sounds good.
I was going to give you through the bathroom window, but I'm going to sneak one up on you now. Still going to give you Joe Cocker. You'll know this one. You're listening to Take It From Us Mental Health Radio, broadcasting on 104.6 Planet FM every single Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30. Here is Joe Cocker and Delta Lady. Don't say I don't look after you.
Wonderful, yeah. Delta Lady must have been played by Joe Cocker at his show in Queen Street, His Majesty's, I think it was, when the power went off. That was, of course, during the power crisis in Auckland, and he had to walk off, band had to walk off, but they were back when they got the generators working again, and like there was no hiccup at all.
Wouldn't that rip your nightie? You pay to go to a bloomin' concert and...
it was only about 5 or 10 minutes they got the power back on.
That was all right.
So, anyway, we're Mental Health Radio, take it from us. Today we're talking to Tess Sheeran about her mental health journey. And Tess, balance, we were talking about balance. Is that something that has been a challenge to achieve for you?
Yes, yeah. I'll just throw myself into whatever I'm doing, and I've always had that difficulty of being able to. I think I had it quite well when I was a kid, because, you know, you have school and then there's sport happening all the time, and then there's art, and all of that was happening quite well. But as soon as I left the nest, I think I just haven't been able to have the balance right.
Is it still like that?
Yes. Still like that, yes.
So what are you doing to try and achieve some balance?
Well, I said that I joined a basketball team, so I've done that. I've started to surf again. I've started to do yoga. Just, I think, to be in one place is, you're able to set that up a bit easier. But if you're living all over the show, it is harder to keep that that balance going, because everything changes all the time.
And friends and relationship and that sort of thing, that's all part of balance, isn't it?
Yeah, and I have had some such amazing friends, but when you leave the country, like, I miss some friends from the UK still now, and I haven't lived there for 10 years. But it's not, you know, the connection that you have on Facebook or whatever, it's not enough. And then, you know, even in New Zealand, like I had some amazing friends in Queenstown and up in Raglan when I was last. You know, it's one of those things that they live all over the show too. So, and then I've been in hiding, I guess, or not in hiding, in, what do you call it, just going, you know, learning about what was happening with me and recovering from it, I guess, in Christchurch. So I'm pretty keen to meet some new people.
How long has that sort of period of recovery been?
I don't think that it's going to be, you know, with mental health, if you've had problems early on, it's not just like if you've had a, like, I don't know, just an episode of depression and then it's all of a sudden good again. I think for me it's going to be a longer process of learning how to change the program of what I'm firing and wiring. Yeah.
So how are you changing that program?
So I've been recognising if I have a thought pattern. I think through meditation, I had I learnt about, you know, that you're not actually your thoughts, emotions, and perceptions. And I was very heavily involved into thinking these things and feeling these things, and looking at them as you know, that they're not actually me. That's really helped. A huge amount. I do a lot of meditation. So I'm able to kind of, if I have a hurtful thought, I recognise it, and that would usually send me into more destructive maybe behaviour, or really like hating on myself, I guess, put downs, the self-critic, this kind of stuff. I'm able just to see that and say, is that really? And then almost laugh at it. Just remember the comedy in it, I guess. I forgot comedy. Not all the time, but definitely.
Yeah, sounds as though you're inclined to beat up on yourself a bit.
Yeah, the self-critic was massive. Yeah. Right. I actually read, I had a friend who's also a therapist, but not my therapist, but I guess she was pretty great here. She gave me a book by Kristen Neve, who's a psychologist, and it's called Self-Compassion. And I read that, and that's just, it's called The Proven Power of Being Kind to Yourself. And it was probably the first book. I read a lot of books. And, yeah, that was the first book, and I really could connect with that, and that's helped me massively. Yeah.
In the blog that you wrote, which took a lot of courage to write, you refer to this book by Johan Hari.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic book.
Lost Connections. It's called Lost Connections.
Yeah, that's it. Yep, I recommend anyone out there that's struggling to have a read of that book. Even if you know somebody, it's just good for anyone to read, even if they don't have mental health problems.
I mean, in that blog, you say I'm a little sceptical about going public about having this illness. Has it been worthwhile to you to go public on this mental illness?
Yeah, absolutely. Just connecting with other people and sharing my story and just realising that there's so many people out there that are having problems and that we're not alone on it, I guess. I didn't want to be judged, and I didn't want depression to define me.
So what sort of response have you had to your blog?
Yeah, so I have written a few. So I had some very moving comments and private messages from people, some of them that I didn't even know, and I can read a few of them out if you like.
That'd be great.
Yeah. So I hope you're on the mend, Tess. We need good souls like you on the planet to keep fighting for nature. So glad to hear you're in a better place now, and so sorry to hear you had such a hard path to follow to get back to being well. Much love from Cornwall. Just tried to call. Hope you're on the road to recovery. Love you. And then your wonderful, incredible words from a strong, credible, lovely lady. Big love to you, gorgeous. P.S. We get it and rock and roll with you. Kia kaha, Tess. Thank you for writing this. Big hug for you, Tess. You're a gorgeous human. You're, you know, like really lovely, lovely comments. And then I did have this comment, which I think about often, which goes, all things must break down before we break through. As such, I reckon all previous breakdowns were in fact breakthroughs. My two cents, love you.
Do you feel that you've had a breakthrough as a result of a breakdown?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I don't think I'll be that same person. I think I'll be a better person. Absolutely. It wasn't my fault. I have the understanding that I have got depression, but now that I've had the time and the space to understand why, I think that I will be, yeah, better and hopefully never return to what was, yeah, my destructive self-critical self-loathing.
I sometimes wonder whether we have to go through the sadness to be able to appreciate the happiness.
Yeah, I think it's easy to forget how amazingly, you know, how the good things in life sometimes when you are, you know, you're suffering and you're trapped in these thought patterns that are so fast and consuming. There's this idea that it's, that it's people, I think, get that idea that people are selfish sometimes when they're depressed, but it's more that the thoughts are that consuming that they can't see anything other, you know.
There's that fear of reaching out too, that you're going to end up losing friends or being criticised and that sort of thing. That's a huge thing, and I wonder how much that impacts on a lot of people. Is, my God, you know, am I going to lose my friends? Are they going to tell me I'm, you know, losing the plot?
Yeah, probably. But I would highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. Just do it.
Sorry, highly recommend.
Yeah, just speaking about it, talking to your friends. You're not worth having those friends if they don't care. So, you know, just go for it. There's no point in suffering. Like, I really, if you're that bad, like, you have to. There's no choice. I certainly felt like that. There was no choice. I had to get better or I wasn't going to be there for much longer.
So there's no gain without pain.
Yeah.
You use the word suffering depression. Do you still talk about suffering depression?
No, I mean, I obviously did, and I have, and I can definitely recognise, oh, okay, my thoughts are getting super fast at the moment. I definitely can recognise when I'm going or feeling low, or but I instead of being so involved with those, I just say to myself, okay, so this is happening, and I need to do this to get out of it. So I'll either go and help someone connect with somebody or go and do some sport or meditate or, I use a lot of self-compassion talk now. I even have an alarm that goes off my phone sometime that says, love you, you're enough, just be, you know, just little tools like this, yeah.
Yeah, do you do any breathing?
Yeah, I do. I have got into meditation a lot, absolutely.
And how do you do that meditation?
I started doing 20 minutes because I was very restless. I would call myself an active relaxer, so I didn't think I'd be able to do meditation. And so I started doing just 20-minute guided meditations, and there's one called an eco-meditation, which is about all the ecology around us. And, I went through and I started doing that, and then I read another book, and I started to be able to do longer meditations and without just remembering what I was going through with the guided ones and then just doing it in silence. And I can now do hour meditations and it helps me a lot. It really does.
So that was an ECO meditation.
Yeah, if you just look at that on YouTube. Yep, ECO. The other guy that really helped me as well was Dr. Joe Dispenza. He's a neuroscientist. He's got some YouTube clips. He's fascinating.
Sorry, that's Dr.
Dr. Joe Dispenza.
Dispenza?
Yeah.
Dispenser. Dispenza.
Let me have a look. I have this written somewhere.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that...
Yeah.
Do you have any apps, any meditation apps that you can access?
I don't do apps per se now. I do silent meditation.
Right.
But I know a lot of people do those. And if I have had, because I'm not too, I would like to be more regular, but I'm only doing like one or two a week, which is better than nothing for sure, but I would like to get in a habit of doing it more regular than that. So I think the guided way is a way to bring bring myself back into doing, and then I can get back to the hour. Yeah.
And so with that,
I know a lot of people do use apps.
Yeah, with that eco meditation, do you go into nature yourself? And
you can do, but this is actually just, you know, you sit down and just basically become present in the moment. You know, you can hear everything around, your heart beating and the sounds. If you wanted to do it outside, you can.
Right. Do you, if you're snowboarding, if you're still snowboarding, do you do any meditation when you're up the mountain?
Yeah, that would be good, but you're often not really that alone. We have smaller fields here, so there's people everywhere. I'm not very good at doing it if there's lots of noise. I know you're supposed to be able to do it wherever, but it's much easier if it's quieter.
Right.
But yeah, that would be a cool spot to do it for sure.
Yeah. So we're getting close to the end of the show. Is there anything that you particularly wanted to say about reaching out to help others?
Yeah, if anyone, yeah, just don't be scared to talk about it, really. And if you're going to help, like what I thought about when I felt quite nervous speaking, even just speaking on this show, was that if it helps somebody else, I mean, that's all that really matters, isn't it? Because it's a horrible place to be, and we can change the program, definitely. It's not like if you were brought up like me that it was a chemical imbalance and that you're going to have it forever. I think we can 100% change.
Do you believe that, you know, what the pharmaceutical companies say to sell their pills, that we have a chemical imbalance?
I think there is a biological, and Johan talks about that, there's definitely a biological component, but I think it's more susceptibility to getting it. So, you know, susceptibility, it's not just that you definitely have it, you know, and this is it.
Right.
Yeah. So
we may
better, just have to work on it and change what we fire and why. Yeah.
Right. Okay, well, Tess, thank you very much. Thank you for writing to Planet FM and offering your service. And it was a while ago, I think, now, but we finally sort of connected and able to do the broadcast.
Cool. Thanks for having me on the show, Sheldon.
Yeah, thank you.
Catch you later.
Okay.
Thanks.
So, take it from us. I think we've got half a second or something.
We have. I just actually had gone to cue the next song, if we had it, which was the UB40, Where Did I Go Wrong? So we'll save that for next week. But do you know what the UB40 stands for?
No.
Unemployment Benefit, apparently. apparently that's where they got their name from. I thought, righto.
Well, they'd be multi-millionaires now, I would think.
Actually, just while we quickly touch on it, did you see the documentary that was on about Queen, Natalie Lambert coming on board and Queen reviving themselves?
No, I didn't.
Oh, champion. It was on, I think, Prime TV. We have a few more moments, so I'll leave it to you.
Well, I was just trying to think of something mental health that cropped up on stuff. There's a story saying that somebody at Auckland University is being thrown out because of their mental health challenges. I think that's going to be a story that we need to keep an eye on. The Mental Health Foundation is absolutely appalled that Auckland University is taking a stance against a student with a mental health vulnerability. So that's been Take It From Us again. I hope that you've listened in and that you'll be back next Tuesday at 12:30.
Catch you then. Have a good week.